This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us as we go into hour number three tonight. This morning. Tomorrow night will be round one of the NBA draft, round two of the NBA draft. And Victor Wembanyama will be the number one pick by the San Antonio Spurs. As we talked about earlier this morning, there have been a couple of players where they have been the undisputed number one pick. You knew it whenever the lottery was taking place. People just sort of said, this is the lottery for this particular player. We've had some drafts we didn't know who the number one pick is going to be. And we've had some where, like with Victor Wembanyama, we absolutely guaranteed we knew what was going to happen. This is becoming a little different, whereas you can be the consensus number one pick among everybody in the NBA, meaning of the players that are available, this guy's the best. This guy can change a franchise. This guy can help a team win a championship later down the road in his career. You can build a team around this particular player. Victor Wembanyama is not being talked about in that way. Victor Wembanyama is being talked about as a generational unicorn. I mean, a unicorn, generational unicorns don't exist because unicorns don't exist. But he's been talked about in a way that says this guy is different. He's not only going to help lead San Antonio, he's going to be the face of the league. He's going to blow the league away with the things he's going to be able to do. He's going to be hard to guard against. He's going to be hard to do, you know, all those kind of things. But how much of that has been... How many people take that and go, we'll see. We've had great players in this league, that have been going to be the number one pick who did not lead their teams to championships, who had good seasons, Hall of Fame careers, but did not lead their teams to championships. Some players have been coming in with tremendous size. Some players have come in with a scoring presence or a knack for certain plays and a discipline, et cetera, et cetera. But they're still waiting to see if they can win a championship. There hasn't been the general prediction of championships with Victor Wembanyama. I think it's more like, yeah, eventually he'll win some, probably, you know, at least two or three. But you never know with guys. I mean, they can win five, they can win six, they can win zero. But I think the way he's being talked about is that he's something different. He is so unique in the way he plays that he's going to be worth the price of admission all the time. You know, if you have the NBA League Pass, and let's say you do it because you like the Sacramento Kings, you're going to watch San Antonio, if you can, just to see him play. His highlights are going to be part of the daily package that you're going to get every single morning. It's the knowledge that he's a special kind of athlete. You know, Giannis Antetokounmpo came into this league, and there were a lot of people who just couldn't pronounce his last name, and yet early in his career, there were enough people, smart enough people, to sort of recognize, oh, wait, I know this guy is going to be really good. And you started to see it with young people. Like, they were wearing Giannis jerseys before wearing Giannis jerseys were cool. Like, we're talking like 2014, that kind of era, 15 maybe, where you started going, yeah, this guy... Like, people are wearing his jerseys. A young kid from Greece, really had a cool last name with a bunch of letters in it that would make you win any Scrabble tournament. But the reality was that people were really projecting that one day the Greek Freak would be the leading guy in the NBA, the face of the league, if that. Victor Wembanyama is not getting any growth pains. He's coming right in. And as we saw yesterday, throwing out the pitch at Yankee Stadium, being, you know, traveling, doing the media, doing all that. They know what this is. He knows what this is. This is a coronation tomorrow night of everything that he is as a player. Now, Scoot Henderson is an interesting player to me because he's in the G League, and he is a guy that could possibly go two. But if he doesn't go two, if Brandon Miller is selected by Charlotte, Portland has a very interesting decision. Because Portland has the third pick in the draft. Now, what do they do? If you've got Scoot Henderson, a guy that is a playmaking guard that is available at that spot, do you take him and then you have to lose Damian Lillard because Lillard doesn't want to be a part of any youth movement in Portland, even if you have the third best player in the draft? He knows that now. He knows he's got the third best player in the draft. They're going to get one of those two guys. And he's still saying, I want to be directed towards another team if that's the direction that you're going. By some accounts that he does, he would like to win a championship in Portland, but by most accounts, he is looking at it saying, you know what? I know where the direction of where this team wants to go. I would rather them get veterans that can help me win a championship, But I also know that there's a desire in this organization to say, let's put some youth on the floor and let's build from scratch again. And he doesn't want to be part of something that's not going to go places. But Scoot Henderson could be a fun guy to play with. Really could. Whether he goes to Portland or Charlotte with the number two pick. I don't know where it's going. Most people have that just sort of as a pick 'em between both of those guys. And then after that, you know, it's the Twins there and players along those lines. But I think the top three are where the action is. As I said earlier this morning, we're still wondering if the rumors about Zion Williamson are true, or the latest is that he's going to be held put in New Orleans.
Now, is this, with the porn star releasing tapes or threatening to release tapes, is this helping or hurting her cause?
Her cause, because
her whole thing is, you know, to embarrass Zion.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm sure there's a payday wanting to have happen as well.
Oh, I'm sure.
There's always a motive of money behind this.
Sure. Yeah.
If you're hurting his trade value all of a sudden, like you, I mean, what if the Pelicans just go, "Oh, we can't do anything with you. Just cut you."
Yeah. Well, no.
His
contract's guaranteed. He's got nine figures coming to him no matter what. So, but I think he lands where he
obviously
lands.
She's not a fan of the Pelicans.
No. I'm curious with that. If I'm the Pelicans, do I really want to get rid of him, or do I really want to work it out? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know, because here's the deal. You're looking at the potential.
When he's on, he's really good.
Yeah. You're looking at the potential of what he could be. Now, I'll go back to what we were talking about last segment. Like, the Astros have been struggling with Lance McCullers. He's been injured pretty much off and on since 2021. And he is shut down once again and having surgery. And so I don't even know if he made a start this season. And the problem is that he is injured way more often than he is healthy. But when he is on, he is probably one of the more dynamic pitchers in the league.
Yeah.
And it's just, here's a team that, you know, is coming to the crossroads with their guy right now, too. Like, do we hold on to him? I mean, yeah, Zion is a great player, but what, it was like 20-plus games over two seasons?
Yeah, great. And it's not so much the injuries, it's how you get injured in the first place, and then the recovery of those injuries.
The recovery of those injuries, or even him, like, saying, like, oh, you know, I could probably play, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, you had a hamstring injury that was 6 to 8 weeks at the most that turned into a half a year.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, what happened?
So I'm wondering where...
He's still not quite ready.
Yeah, I'm wondering where his dedication is.
Yeah, and then they told him, listen, you stop gaining weight. Put some work into this. And he's like, and from everybody who's saying, look, this is not what the guy likes to do. He doesn't like to put the work effort into it. He just likes to play basketball.
Yeah.
You know, but there's another side of it where you want to make sure your players are staying in game shape, and he wasn't staying in game shape. And there's a level of frustration where you're like, wait a minute, we're paying you a lot of money to be, you know, at least we can't ask you to be healthy all the time. Injuries happen. But we certainly can ask you to be part of the guidelines of which we're trying to set to get you on the court faster.
You know, but is it his mindset? Because here's a guy who's been given a boatload of money, hundreds of millions of dollars, fully guaranteed, but he could just sit back in New Orleans and just put his feet up on the couch and play video games all day.
Yeah, sure.
And he doesn't have to worry, where's my next meal coming from?
So if you are a team in the NBA that is interested in talking to him, and talking to the Pelicans about him, if indeed he's on the trading block, now again, people saying Pelicans aren't going to move him, but we don't know. If you are, then you have to be convinced of your own ability to turn him around. You have to be convinced that in your methods, in your coaching, in your structure, he would not be that same way in New Orleans. We did this in the NFL where there would be a player and you'd go, well, Bill Belichick would never put up with that. If he goes to New England, he's going to understand the Patriot way and the Patriot structure and all of that. You'd have to be very confident that you have that built into your organization. And again, I know he's from the North Carolina area, went to Duke. I get that. But I still think it's not going to be an easy sell if you trade an unknown but has tremendous upside like a Scoot Henderson or a Brandon Miller for a guy that's already shown he's willing to get fat and wait around for the right opportunity to come back. When the team needed him the most towards the stretch run, he was nowhere to be found. When the team kept wondering what exactly is happening, why is he ready? He's not ready.
Or Charlotte Fine taking him on, just be like, oh, we don't really care what we do in the playoffs. We just want notoriety on our team.
And here's the thing. The Pelicans, from what I've been reading, they're not interested in getting rid of him unless they can get into the top three of the draft.
Right.
So if you are Portland, do you want Zion Williamson paired up with Damian Lillard? I can only imagine the headache that might be to get rid of that third pick. So the answer really is Charlotte. The answer, that's really it. Like, it's Charlotte. Charlotte has the two pick. They're going to want that two pick. If they don't want Zion, that's not happening. And if the Pelicans feel like, you know what, we will figure out, we'll figure this as he gets older, he might change his tune on this kind of stuff.
Instead of thinking with the dollars, he'll think of legacy.
I really do hope that tomorrow night is a little bit more chaotic than people. I hope there's a lot more stuff on the table flying.
Because, there was a little bit of chaos with the NFL draft, and that made it fun.
Yeah, but it does make it fun.
You know, that first, first 10 picks?
Yeah.
There was a lot of moving going around, and this is like, oh, this is great.
Certainly much. But, I'm kind of excited to see 7-3 Victor Wembanyama stand on that stage. Adam Silver gives him the Spurs jersey. That'll come on Thursday night. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. We'll get to some NFL, some news of the possible landing spot for Dalvin Cook, where are some people thinking he will land, and what could be in store for him. That's coming up as we continue. Good Wednesday morning to you, the first day of summer.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Songs that celebrate summer, June 21st, starting the first day of summer. Still like the Warren Zevon version, I get it. Trader Vic's, his hair was perfect. Never mind, I got it. Don't worry about it, I got it. Reports are Dalvin Cook might be signing a $21 million deal with a two-year deal with the Miami Dolphins. That has not been confirmed, but that is coming down as a rumor from CBS Sports' Cody Benjamin, who's a former agent, saying that that the deal is 2 years, $21 million, but we have not gotten any confirmation on that. I was under the impression, it was talk, that Dalvin Cook and DeAndre Hopkins wanted to team up together and play on a team. And the only place I could see that really working was two. It was New England and Tennessee. Those are the only two places I could see it working. And I don't think the Tennessee Titans really wanted a dual situation. I don't think they wanted Dalvin Cook. They don't mind DeAndre Hopkins. They're trying to figure out the A.J. Brown error in their decision to trade A.J. Brown. See, if you remember draft day a year ago, kids, the Tennessee Titans traded A.J. Brown to the Eagles, and he would later go on to win to play in a Super Bowl with the Eagles. But A.J. Brown was jettisoned because the Titans did not want to pay him the $100 million, a contract worth $100 million, and they had a guy in Treylon Burks from Arkansas that they thought was A.J. Brown light. He was the 2.0. He was built in the same way, caught the ball in a similar way. And they thought, well, why would we need to pay A.J. Brown all this money when we got Treylon Burks, who's kind of like A.J. Brown, right? Well, obviously with Ryan Tannehill getting hurt, it really didn't manifest itself into a good season. And Burks had gotten was hurt and whatnot. But so they're trying to make that up by getting a real wide receiver one on the team. I don't think they're interested in Dalvin Cook, but the Miami Dolphins certainly are. And that was an early team that was being pegged to land Dalvin Cook, the ex-Minnesota Viking, was the Miami Dolphins, because their depth at running back isn't all that spectacular, but they still have one of the most dynamic offenses in the game. I think they got Mozart back there and some others, but they don't have a player like Dalvin Cook. So, again, this has not been confirmed, but again, CBS Sports is CBS Sports is Cody Benjamin is reporting that it's a two-year, $21 million contract.
God, but, that'll make that team.
Not until Schefter points it out on Twitter.
No, I guess so. But that'll make that team dangerous upon dangerous.
You got to like the Dolphins and what they've at least done. They saw this they saw this AFC blowing up, and they went, you know what? We'll blow it up with them. No problem. We will. You saw this tremendous talent starting to emerge. These teams were starting to really put themselves in positions to go to Super Bowls, win Super Bowls, or at least be in the conversation for a Super Bowl. And, you know, and I'm talking about, obviously, Kansas City, Cincinnati that went and lost, and Buffalo is yet to go but seems to always be in the conversation. And Miami said, you know what? We'll play along. We'll be right up there. No problem. We will do that. We will go out and get players. We will make players. So, you know, and that's all you can ask for from your organization. So I think, I haven't seen this come down officially, but I think it's a great move for the Dolphins. I think it's fine. I think in an era where running backs, it's too bad, but the running backs are kind of the position you don't really want to be making some really serious money, like in this league. You know, it's just not wide receiver. It's not quarterback, obviously. It's not even good defensive player money. But $21 million seems to be about right for a roster. And they are, again, building a fantastic team. Defensively, they're strong. Offensively, they're dynamic. Their number one running back is Raheem Mostert. They've got Jeff Wilson, who actually played pretty well at times last year. And then that's about it. Devin Achane, the kid from Texas A&M. Is on there, and Miles Gaskin. That's their depth chart. So Dalvin Cook is absolutely an upgrade here. But, oh, did you hear about the news about Tyreek Hill? He hit it.
Hit
a guy in the back of the head at a marina down in Florida.
This must have been after the shark, Drew
right.
Rosenhaus wrestling a shark.
A little altercation.
Maybe he would have been better off jumping in with the shark.
Right, exactly. This is, again, from the AP. Dolphins wide receiver Tyreek Hill under investigation on allegations of assault battery at a Miami Beach marina. According to WPLG-TV in Miami, Hill allegedly hit a marina employee during a disagreement that took place on Sunday. Andy Slater, who's a sports talk show host in Miami, reported that Hill slapped the employee on the back of the head, but that the employee has declined to press charges at this time. So the Dolphins, of course, because they have no information, are like, we're looking into this matter. Don't ask us anything. We don't have any comment until we know. So that's at least one story that is coming out. But I love their aggressiveness. I like their coach. I like the way their team is built. I there's a lot I like about the Dolphins. I underestimated them last year, and I shouldn't have, but I am not going to underestimate them this year. Not at all. I wouldn't be surprised if they won that division. I think there's some drama in Buffalo that still needs to be worked out. With Stephon Diggs, you may not hear more about it, but I still think that issue is still going to percolate a little bit. It's up to Sean McDermott to squash that. I think Sean McDermott completely dropped the ball on it when it was going down. I think he allowed it to fester a little longer than it should, and then he went to the media with it when he said he was very concerned. If you're a coach, let me get one thing out of your vocabulary, the words very concerned. If you're very concerned, don't tell anybody, and if you're not as concerned, don't use the word very. Like, just do not use it in any capacity whatsoever. There's absolutely no need for you to go into somebody's injury or somebody's some disagreement or something like that. Anytime you throw out the words very concerned out to the media, they are going to pounce on it like meat in a lion's den. They're going to go right after it. And that's exactly what they did. Once you had Josh Allen and Von Miller sort of acting as if they were taking sides in the deal, then you have another thing that is going down. So again, is it a huge deal? Is Stephon Diggs going to quit the team? No, but it's enough of some discourse that you can't mess around in that AFC. You better be all in. Everybody better be on the same page. There better be not any dissension in the ranks, because the Dolphins are coming for that top spot, and you do not know what the Jets are going to look like with Aaron Rodgers and this young team that was so attractive to him in the first place.
Now, I think the Bills are in real trouble.
I
mean, last year it was almost like, you know, I mean, they had the Dolphins to contend with, but it became an easy situation for them because the Patriots, you know, were having an off year. The Jets were just a mess, and Tua couldn't stay healthy. So it was like, okay, you know, it was right for the picking. They could have kind of were eased it. I mean, they won the NFC East or AFC East like with ease.
Yeah.
This year, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if they ended in third.
It would be
surprising, sure, but I could sit back and go, yeah, okay, it makes kind of sense.
I've got a difficult question here because the parameters are, you know, can change, but how long do we really think the Bills window is going to be open where they don't win a championship?
Right.
Like, at what point do you feel like you've got to make a change or two in certain personnel, and you can't keep some of the guys you want to keep because you've got to figure out how to get better? Look, the reason I say it's a difficult question is because, like, the Green Bay Packers won a Super Bowl in 2010, 2011. They won Super Bowl 45. All right, so when they won Super Bowl 45, there was a belief like, well, Aaron Rodgers, he should win a couple more of these, but they never got back to the game.
Yeah.
Right? But they did at least cash in on the window when it was opened with their talent. But they were also a team that had a lot of talent every single year. They had 13 wins, 12 wins, winning the division, et cetera, but couldn't close the deal in the playoffs. So, but the Bills are different. Like, the Bills have been brewing something for a little bit. They get Josh Allen. We start to recognize how good this team is becoming with him. He kind of got an early start to his career in terms of excellence.
They were everyone's favorite last year.
Everyone's favorite. You build it up. They're 13 seconds away from going to the AFC title game. All of those things that happen on this journey. Then the Bills, you know, with DeMar Hamlin, everybody sort of embraces this team. We kind of embrace them, if you know the league history, because of the four straight Super Bowl losses and how passionate the fan base is in one of the smallest markets in the NFL. But the reality of it is that the window is short. It's short. If you don't figure out a way to get to the Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl with the way you've orchestrated your team, if there's going to be creeping in, well, maybe we need to get better on this side of the ball, or maybe we need to get better at this position at the expense of having to let this guy go or that guy go that was part of the original plan to make it all happen. It happens to teams all the time, is that you have a feeling like they're so close. But then what happens is when they go to the playoffs a couple of times and they don't cash it in, then you go, all right, well, maybe we're doing something wrong, right? The Bills used to have to think about Kansas City. How do we get better? How do we beat Kansas City? Remember, that's why they got Von Miller. Remember, they just felt like in that season where they were 13 seconds away, they just didn't get to Patrick Mahomes enough. They just didn't get enough pressure to Patrick Mahomes enough. So they went and got Von Miller. But that, now it's a totally different thing. Now it's a completely different landscape. You got to watch out for the Dolphins. You got to watch out for the Jets. You got to watch out for the Bengals. You got to watch out for the Chiefs. The Chargers might be on the rise. Jacksonville might be on the rise. There's too many things going on in the conference to think like, well, we just want to work on focusing on how to beat one team. Because now you're going to have to beat four or five of them. And that's a totally different. And when you don't do that, you are going to be looking around to see why that didn't happen. And the answer might be in your own building with how the Stephon Diggs situation went down. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Remember the words you told me, love me till the day I die. Surrender my everything, cause you made me believe you're mine.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we've been monitoring this submarine story basically took a trip down to see the Titanic. It's been missing since Sunday. I saw this on Twitter. A glimmer of hope remains for rescuing the missing submersible, with the only underwater vehicle in the world capable of rescuing the Titan sub now en route to the area. The remote-operated vehicle named Victor 6000 can reach depths of 20,000 feet and is en route but won't arrive for another 9 hours. Good Lord. If rescuers are able to locate the missing sub in the remote and remote it, they are pushing against the clock if this is their answer.
Why wasn't this sent immediately?
Right? If rescuers are able...
You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of that they're waiting for the clock to strike one.
Yeah.
You know, like, they can defuse the bomb. They've been able to defuse the bomb the entire time, but it's like 5 seconds to go. It's red or green, red or green. And then always snip it right when it turns one.
Yep, exactly.
That's what they're doing here.
Exactly. So it's on its way, and we'll see if they rescue this.
I mean, they sit there and say, well, let's wait. Let's not see if we need it. Maybe we can just find it by, you know, searching in that area again.
Yeah, wouldn't you go, just bring it over just in case? You're dumping a bunch of money into this rescue operation.
At some point, I expect to hear, it's like, you know what, they could have drained the ocean, but chose not to.
Right, exactly, yeah. They could have taken all the liquid out of the oceans to find it. Can you imagine if you could see, if scientists could hypothetically If that could happen, where they go, look, some god or something goes, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take away all the water for 5 hours. And it won't affect anything, because I know if we did that, it would destroy life as we know it. But I'm going to make it so that everybody is just normal. And you guys go explore, take pictures or whatever. What in the world they would find if they could see what some of the areas of the ocean look like? Because it's one of the most incredible things that we have on this planet. We might find Atlantis, for crying out loud.
Oh, I think we will.
You know, so but it's
I but still hold right. out hope.
Yeah, but you're right, man. It's there is a depth which we're not gonna be able to go down. And this thing, if it's the only thing that could have rescued them at the bottom at 19,000 feet, then it should have been sent there as quickly as possible
right.
in case they discover. Maybe they don't need it. Maybe it pops up on maybe it popped up, but it's on another side of the it's far away, and they have to kind of search it that way. Whatever it may be, but they should have had this thing en route to that area almost immediately.
Yeah, I mean now it's wait. You got to wait another 9 hours.
By the way, I don't want.
Don't they have like 10 hours of oxygen left?
And don't get mad at me on this, people. Don't be mad on this, people. There are 2 billionaires on this vessel. I think is there another one? Is there 3? I know there's 2.
Well, okay? There's 4 passengers, one driver, right?
I think the CEO of the company is in there.
Not
the CEO. Somebody within the company is there. And I know that there are 2 people who have paid, 3 people who have paid money to be on the sub. There was a guy from Pakistan and his son, and then the billionaire from Great Britain. So don't get mad at me, folks, when I tell you this. All of this is going to get paid for. Like, if they rescue this, all of this is getting paid for.
Those guys will write you a check today.
These guys will write a check to whatever rescue organization gets them out of this hellhole. I'm not kidding.
And on top of that, they'll say, "Hey, do you want me to write a check to a charity and donate money in your name?
Tell me how much all of this cost to get us home safely to our families, and I'll double it." Imagine if you were a billionaire and you were in a submersible and you've been underwater since Sunday, thinking you were going to run out of oxygen and die a horrible suffocating death, or you were going to, and you're just, every second that you're down there, you're wondering, is anyone coming to get us? It's dark. I can't see. I'm sitting down. I'm cramped. I got a little bathroom. And you're a billionaire, and somebody put all of that effort to get you home. Oh my God, they'll go right around the room to every, what is your operating cost? If they are good men, they might be awful men with money, who knows, but if they're good men with money.
Even if they're bad men with money, I think you throw it out there to them.
I think they would still go, wow.
Yeah, it turns out, I mean, it's the pilot Stockton Rush, who is also the CEO of the company.
Okay, so the CEO of the company is there.
Is the pilot.
Yeah.
And then his passengers are the British adventurer, that Hamish whatever guy from who's the billionaire from England.
Right.
And
right,
then
right.
The 2 members of a Pakistani business family, which was the father and son, and a Titanic expert.
Man, I would have never gotten in that thing. I would have, first thing I saw, no chance.
What I thought it was is vastly different than what it actually is. Because I've seen submersible subs go and they have like a little, you know, little glass portal that you can look out of. You can't even. And what I found out is it's just like crawling into a steel barrel.
Yeah.
And, you know, that barrel going all the way down to the bottom. You can't see outside of it. I was like, okay, what's the point?
Like, I just watched a couple weeks ago, my wife and I watched The Meg.
Yes.
In preparation for The Meg 2. And he's like in a spaceship.
Yeah.
He's like,
I said, that's what I'll, you know.
Guiding it down into the deep.
When you can do the videogram.
Yeah.
You know, where it looks like it's a window, then you know what? Then I'll go down.
That's right. That's right.
But I mean, you know, the way it looks right now or just what it is right now, it's like, you know, just put me in a big barrel. I mean, I'm not expecting it to be like a glass bottom sub or the submarine ride at, you know, Disneyland or Disney World or whatever.
Yeah.
I know it's not going to be like that, but I thought it was going to be something a little bit better.
Sure. Sure. Like 20,000 leagues under the sea.
Yeah.
Like, hey, look, it's look at all the beauty we're watching in the ocean in this submarine that I own. Yeah, no doubt. You know, Jaws is obviously one of the top scariest movies concerning aquatic life. But I always felt uncomfortable watching The Abyss.
Yeah.
There was 2 things in The Abyss that I did not like, that did not sit well with me. There were 2. One was when that actress, Mary Mastrantonio.
Yeah.
She had to drown herself on purpose.
Right.
Because Ed Harris was the best swimmer. And so he's like, you wear this. I'm going to drown myself. And then I know that you can do CPR. And I've got a window of time where you can bring me back. So you got a boogie because I'm going to die. I'm going to drown myself.
But wasn't it was like drowning yourself so that way your body can handle the depth of the ocean?
Yeah. Oh no. There's three things. So the second one is, yeah, him wearing the suit where they go, we're going to fill this with an oxygen water.
It's the same. It's the same fluid that's in the that you had as a baby before
that's
you were
right,
born.
Right. Exactly.
That's the part I remember. And I was just like,
and he was like freaking out, and he's like, no, just. Just breathe. It'll freak you out. But yeah. I'm not. No, I'd be. My heart rate would be through the roof.
Yeah.
If I was sucking in that water, it's horrible. And then the third thing was when the bad guy, the crazy guy, had the part of the ship, but it was sinking, and he was in there, and it just kept going lower and lower into the abyss.
Yep.
And it started to crack, and he realized, oh, this I'm done for.
I'm
and
dead.
Then he just and then crush. Then that whole thing that he was in just completely crushed into whatever it was, pressurized it right into the thing.
Yeah.
Those three things made me kind of
I'll never forget that scene where you're just like, we're going to fill this up in your lungs, but just breathe naturally.
Yeah.
He was writing on
the keypad. Remember that? Because
yeah.
They had to do it because he had to go down to a depth to unhook a bomb, a nuclear bomb. They wanted him to cut a wire, and they didn't know how to. They were like, "That bomb's down there, and it's going to go off, and we better go take care of it." And he's like, "All right." So he goes down there, but he then tells him, "It's a one way trip. I knew I wouldn't be able to make it back up." But yeah, the abyss was petrifying. Not like Jaws petrifying, because that shark kept coming and coming and coming. I actually had a good time with the Meg. I didn't think the Meg was all that scary.
Nah, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. And then, it gave me hope that, like, oh, is there an actual sea lab like that where they have an underwater component? Because that just looked like a fun place. It looked
like it was
still under construction. You know, the scene where she's, like, using that remote control ball thing?
Right.
Like, moving
she's
the ball.
Through.
You know, but I looked at that. I was like, man, how much fun would it be just to be submerged underwater like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And just
totally
be able to look out and be like, oh, look.
Yeah.
Look outside your window. There's a whale.
Remember, what was it, Deep Blue Sea? Remember that movie? With Samuel L. Jackson
and
Michael
Rappaport? Yeah.
And was LL Cool J? LL Cool J was in that.
I think
he
so.
He played the cook. Yeah, those sharks, they grew the shark's brains. such a good premise. They grew the shark's brains because there was a protein in the brain that could fix Alzheimer's. And so they made these sharks uber smart. And then they got loose. And they were like, yeah, and we know what we're doing. We're coming after you. That's when Samuel Jackson gives the speech and he gets eaten. And they just keep attacking. So, yeah, the ocean is a scary, scary place.
And again, it really is. I mean, like we said before, we haven't fully explored any of it.
If you're a billionaire and you get rescued, you are writing checks.
Writing checks.
That was my overall
check. Just for $1 billion.
That's right. We'll come back, wrap up the Wednesday edition on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's, as we continue on the first day of summer.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Oh, a little Seals and Croft, summer breeze. You did a good job today on the first day of summer. Good stuff. Celebrating this day, the longest day of the year.
Yeah, we just play this. I got to play this on the way home.
Yeah, Seals and Croft's great. Diamond Girl.
Yeah, but this song is just 100% chill.
No, it really is. Good voice, good melody. Just good song. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Philip gets the cheesiest tweet of the day.
No, boy.
Dolphins about to cook the AFC.
Oh, yeah.
Well done, Philip. I don't know if that's like a dad joke.
Almost. It is a dad joke.
Yeah. By the way, if somebody ever tells you a dad joke and prefaces it with it's a dad joke, you can't tell them it's not funny.
Yeah.
You have to just laugh.
I you know, I find myself doing a lot of dad jokes around the old house.
Like, I told my daughter, I said, hey, why don't cannibals eat clowns? She goes, why? They taste funny. She's like, ugh. I go, what do you mean, ugh? It's a dad joke. Yeah. They're not ugh.
No,
What are you talking about, ugh? What do you mean, ugh?
You ever, get into those TikTok videos where the two guys try to make each other laugh with telling dad jokes?
Yeah.
God, they're hysterical.
I think I probably stole that from one of those
probably,
videos.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't come up with that on my own. But yeah, no, it's just chill out and just laugh at the dad joke. They're stupid, but there's a purpose for them.
They're meant to be stupid.
They're meant to be stupid. They're not meant to be deep. They're not like Norm MacDonald jokes, where the late Norm MacDonald would take a joke. And you keep going and going and going and going and going and going. And then he would give you the punchline and you'd laugh. I got to interview Norm MacDonald one time. He was in Denver to do a show. He came in and I reminded him of a joke. I told him, I said, I got to tell you something. I said, I heard you tell a joke about getting lottery tickets as birthday gifts. And every time I get a lottery ticket in a birthday card, I think of you. He goes, oh, yeah, that joke. I said, yeah. When you said, hey, we ever get a lottery ticket as a birthday gift? It's like a person is saying, hi, happy birthday, here, nothing. and then he goes, but you don't want to ever give a lottery ticket to somebody who actually wins, right? You'd be like, oh, yeah, hi, yeah, the lottery ticket. Oh, yeah, $100 million. Oh, yeah, congratulations, happy birthday. Yeah, and I said every time I get a lottery ticket, I think of that joke.
That is funny. Yeah,
it is funny.
You know, I remember, I don't know if outside my kids – I don't think I've ever given a lottery ticket as a gift.
Yeah.
But even then, like, you know, for my kids, I'm like, yeah, I hope you win. I hope you win. But I always wondered, I've gotten lottery tickets as a gift, like, you know, little scratchers. And like, do they hope that they're probably hoping I only win like $2 or $3.
I have gotten from certain relatives lottery cards that are in they're like the $20 card range, you know, whether it's like,
okay, yeah.
You know, the ones that got some meat on them. And I always go, you know, $20 straight up wouldn't be a bad thing.
Yeah, just give me straight $20
you know
cash.
I mean? Like, yeah, if you know, I love the opportunity to win $500 million on New York scratch off ticket, but I'm more likely to go, you know, maybe grab a cocktail or two next time I go out to dinner with the $20. Or I'll buy some golf balls or something I might need, just, you know.
Or just whatever.
I might have it around for my kids to steal out of my wallet when they're broke.
Maybe I'm going to go buy something that's more than $20, but I'll give them $20 cash and it makes it cheaper. It makes me feel better.
That's right. So
like it makes me think like, oh, look, I'm buying a new putter for $150 instead of $160 or $170.
I know it's exciting to scratch off lottery tickets. Lord knows I get the urge every now and then. I'll be at a gas station, like anything else. I'm like, oh, just give me a couple of those $5.
But you see, you know, my problem is now is that if I won big money, I would assume it was fake watching those fake lottery scratcher videos.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Where, you know, every card you get, it's like a guaranteed winner. Like you're definitely going to get 10,000 or 25,000. It's like, I'm not going to overreact. And I'll be like, I'll look at the back and it's like, all right, where's the punchline? I know I didn't just win $10,000 on a scratcher.
I've probably thrown away about $10 in free ticket or $1 or $2 winnings that I just don't want to send back to my relatives in New York so that I can get the money back.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just go, eh. I put it away, and then eventually I just throw
it
away.
Or did you ever – I mean, is it one of those situations, too, like – when you've bought a scratcher or a lottery ticket, like I have a lot of lottery tickets that I'm certain, I know I didn't win the $1 billion and the $1 million prize.
Yeah.
I might have like a $2 or $4 prize in there that I'm just like, I don't even want to take that in.
Yeah, no, you just take them in. You go, oh, here we go. Got to turn them in.
Yeah. So, it's too much.
I know. Did I tell you the story about the lottery ticket that I had that I thought I was a big winner with?
No, it was old.
No, let me tell you the story real quick. So this was years ago. So I get a lottery ticket from New York from my aunt, and it's a baseball one. Yay, baseball! And it's usually one that says, "Hey, scratch off your runs, and if your opponent's runs is less than your runs, win the prize shown." But there was a caveat to this ticket, and the ticket said, "But if you scratch off the word home run, you win all the prizes on the ticket." And there were 10 games that were on the ticket. So, like, I scratch off my run total, and it's like six. So I scratch off the first one, and it's seven. Oh, I lost that first game. But then I scratched off the second one, and it said home run. And I was elated. I didn't even continue. I called to my wife screaming that I had won. That the most you could win on this tournament was $100,000. And I said to myself, oh my God, I've won $100,000. They rarely print these. They rarely put home run on these cards. I've won every prize on this. 10 prizes. Get the calculator, baby. Our lives are now changed. Get to the first game, dollar. Second game, dollar. Third game, dollar. You see where this is going, right? Fourth game, dollar. Got all the way to the 10. Every prize was $1. Every prize. I won 10 bucks. I was as depressed. Like, I won 10 bucks, but I was so depressed because I was like, there was a moment where I had guaranteed in my brain that I was a big winner. That there was no way, even if I didn't win the 100,000, even if I didn't max out, you know, 10 grand per scratch. I told my wife, I said, we've definitely won something. Like, we've definitely won at least 5 grand, at least 10 grand. There's always those on these tickets. And then my brain went to the idea of, look, the goal of this card was to beat the score, which they had of a bunch of them. But the other goal, the big bonus goal, the big one that you would want is to scratch off that word home run. So when I scratched off home run, I thought I had lucked into one of the 5 tickets that they printed with that particular one on it. No. They made a bunch of those, and they teased you by thinking you had won big, and you did not. So that was the closest I ever came to feeling like I won. The money was already spent in my head, Ron. That was the problem. The money was already spent in my head. Because instead of scratching off that word, home run, those two words, and then immediately scratching, I paused. I called my wife upstairs. Honey, look at this. We were both like, wow. And I was like, think about what we could do with this. Even if it's just $10,000,
this is
two
it.
Little kids, this is it. We'll be able to do this or this. Or we'll be able to get a new car. There was a hunt. The world was our oyster, baby. Nah. Very disappointing. Very, very disappointing. And and I didn't really process it after a while. I was like, wait a minute. I got scammed. It was emotionally scarring. Because you know what, Ron? It would have been better if that card had showed me one game where my score was more than the opponent's score, and then I won $10.
Right.
Like, if the seventh game was like, oh, great. Now they got 3. I win on that particular game. Let me scratch off what that is. Oh, $10. That's cool. I won $10. Wow. Okay. It's not a lot of money, but, you know, whatever. All right, but I won. That would have been better than seeing the goal wording and them just going, ha, fooled you because we hate you. That's basically what this is. What can we do to the clientele that buys these tickets to remind them that we hate them? That's what they're going to do. So that was my lottery ticket story. I'm not saying don't get them. Like I said, I get them.
Hey, you know what? For me, that's I do that. I always remember it's a who was the you might be a redneck comedian.
Oh, Jeff Foxworthy.
Yeah. He had a funny joke about the lottery that I've always thought about too, and he said there's a guy who came into a convenience store, had tar on his pants, tar. And he asked how much the lottery was up to, and they, you know, he says, oh, it's like $15 million. He says, oh, you know, just give me a can of Skull. Like, you know, it's like, can't be bothered buying a lottery ticket for $15 million.
Can't do it.
Need some cash.
Can't do it.
So that's always me. When it gets up there, I'm buying.
That's right. That's right. All right. We'll see you tomorrow as we preview the NBA draft, which will be tomorrow night. The Lombardi Line is coming up next. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Glad you could be with us.